if you have a disabled adult severe enough that their spouse also brings a claim for loss of consortium, who has to pay back the subrogation interest? The answer is the injured claimant does, but the spouse isn't getting money for medical expenses. Her damages, or his, if it's a husband, are for the lost relationship, not for medical expenses. So if you're tempted to say, well, I'll just give all the recovery to my uninjured spouse to skunk the plan, be careful, because the case confirming that the wife didn't owe the subrogation interest, by the time it was affirmed on appeal, she was the ex-wife. So get your conflicts check done and make sure you warn your client what might happen if all the money goes to the spouse. In wrongful death cases, you have the wrongful death beneficiaries who are grieving the lost relationship with their loved one. And then you have the estate claim or survival claim, which is for the decedent's pain and suffering and the decedent's medical expenses prior to death. Again, if there's not enough money to go around, then you want to be strategic and represent perhaps just the wrongful death beneficiaries to shield their recovery from the subrogation claim, and don't bring an action on behalf of the estate for the survival damages or medical expenses. ERISA can't touch the money in at least some cases, and I've cited the case, but I've also cited the contrary opinion out of another Florida jurisdiction. Wrongful death claim is also exempt from a hospital lien because the wrongful death claim doesn't include medical expenses. Medicare's interest doesn't attach to the wrongful death proceeds. Sigmundic is the case I cite in the paper to warn you that if you wait until the very end of the case to go, oh my gosh, I brought a claim for the estate for the survival damages, and now it's going to get the total recovery is going to get gobbled up by the subrogation interest, I think I should ditch that claim and only keep in the wrongful death claim. Texas Supreme Court said, once they're a party, you can't cut them out. So if you're going to try that approach of only bringing the wrongful death claim, do it from the beginning or at least before you've settled the case. Next question is, who is the employer through which the health plan arises? If it's private industry and the employer is furnishing the plan, it may well be ERISA. But if it's funded by insurance, even if it's ERISA, Chapter 140 will regulate it. If it's state or local government, those plans are never ERISA. They are carved out as an exception. If it's a church employee, those plans are typically also exempt from ERISA. And church can be a lot bigger than the actual church employees. They can be preschools. They can be hospitals that are affiliated with religious institutions. So let's talk briefly about ERISA plans. And I guess this is as good a time as any for a disclaimer. I'm touching on all these different kinds of subrogation interests. I'm not giving a deep dive into any of them because there's not enough time to do that. The paper is about 250, 260 pages long. It goes into much more detail. My purpose in this presentation is not to exhaustively cover everything, but to point you in the direction of where to find information, the need to find the specific information, and hopefully the paper will answer the questions if you need to do that deeper dive. And ERISA is a perfect example. You have to look at whether the plan is self-funded or whether the plan is insured, because insured plans are regulated by Chapter 140. Self-funded plans are not, because they're deemed not to be health insurance under ERISA. But there's a hybrid out there. And that hybrid is a self-funded plan that says, you know what, we don't want the employer who's funding the plan through the employer's own money or the contributions of the employees in a big pool. We don't want that plan to be wiped out by catastrophic losses. So we're going to have stop loss coverage. Those are still self-funded plans because the employer's plan pays the providers. But then after a certain stop loss point or attachment point, or essentially a self-insured deductible, the plan gets reimbursed by a stop loss carrier. The question becomes, does that stop loss coverage convert the plan from being self-funded to being insured because the self-funded plan is getting reimbursed by insurance? The answer is no. However, there are some cases that have kind of mused, well, if the stop loss coverage is enough of the total benefits paid that it really looks like insurance, should we start considering that at least to the extent of stop loss coverage, the plan is insured and should be regulated? I don't have a firm answer on that, just that the question has been raised. And one of these days, I'd love to see an answer say that sufficient stop loss coverage could convert it to being an insured plan. So stay tuned.